This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. State regulators are fining the operators of the Natural Gas Rover Pipeline $430,000 for water pollution violations. Brittany Patterson has more.
The State Department of Environmental Protection announced Tuesday that Rover Pipeline LLC, which is owned by Energy Transfer Partners, violated its permit and state laws on multiple occasions. The 713-mile pipeline is 99% completed, according to the company. Ultimately, the pipeline will be used to transport more than 3 billion cubic feet of natural gas daily from processing plants in West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. DEP says inspections over the course of a year, beginning in April 2017, revealed pipeline operators failed to maintain erosion controls and improperly installed silt fences and other perimeter controls. The company also abandoned trash and debris during construction of the pipeline. In total, the company received 18 violation notices and 2 cease and desist orders from DEP, according to the consent decree made public this week. Angie Rosser, executive director of West Virginia Rivers Coalition, says many of the things the Rover pipeline was cited for were repeated violations.
Like, the message wasn't getting across. So I'm glad to see the DEP out there frequently and scrutinizing this closely, but it's frustrating and insulting, I think, that this company just kept causing problems.
As a result of the violations, several streams were flooded with dirt and debris. According to the consent decree, the company has agreed to immediately take measures to comply. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson in Morgantown.
The U.S. Senate Agriculture Commission has passed its version of the Farm Bill, with Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's provisions to remove hemp from a list of Schedule I controlled substances. Nicole Irwin has more.
McConnell's Hemp Farming Act of 2018 legalizes the growing of hemp and also allows hemp cultivators to receive federal crop insurance. Lawmakers made amendments during Wednesday's Agriculture Committee meeting and passed the revised version of the bill with only one dissenting vote from Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa.
Today's bill would allow any snake oil salesman to market and sell any CBD product as a dietary supplement or anything else without any regulatory controls whatsoever.
CBD, or cannabidiol, is oil extracted from hemp. Grassley filed an amendment to the Farm Bill to require the Justice Department to modify the definition of the term hemp to determine if CBD should be controlled by federal law. McConnell says he has included guidance from the Justice Department and FDA in the bill, but declined to include suggestions that would undermine the premise of the bill.
Hemp and its derivatives should be a legal agricultural commodity, just as it was in the United States for many, many years.
McConnell says a full Senate vote on the bill will take place before July 4th. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Nicole Irwin.
Anti-poverty activists say they will continue a campaign of demonstrations and civil disobedience throughout the Ohio Valley, despite being blocked from Kentucky's Capitol building. Becca Schimmel spoke with leaders of the Poor People's Campaign about their goals.
North Carolina minister Reverend William Barber is one of the religious leaders reviving Dr. Martin Luther King's last work, the Poor People's Campaign.
The movement never stopped. It was assassinated. Two ways, physically and politically.
Outside the Kentucky Capitol, Barber said the new Poor People's Campaign also draws on the legacy of the War on Poverty, which brought Lyndon Johnson and Robert Kennedy to Kentucky and impoverished Appalachian communities more than 50 years ago.
Over the years, how we found out that really, the concerns of Appalachian populism and civil rights activism are the same thing. And basically, that's treat people right.
Barber says a central part of the new campaign's 40 days of action now underway at state capitals across the country is to show how racial divisions have kept poor people from coming together. Meanwhile, poverty has dropped from the nation's political debate, even as income inequality has increased.
So this campaign, in some way, picks up that legacy. Because we didn't lose the war on poverty, we left the field.
A new report from the United Nations focused on the 40 million Americans living in poverty. The UN report found Americans live shorter, sicker lives than do citizens of all other rich democracies, and that the U.S. has the greatest income inequality. The Poor People's Campaign is hoping to draw attention to American poverty by grooming leaders from many walks of life.
It's really inspiring, I think, now to see us widen the leadership. You know, when Dr. King was doing this work in '68, his assassination was really devastating to the movement.
That's local organizer and Reverend Megan Houston, pastor of First Christian Church in Bowling Green. She says each state has three chairs who help to lead the movement on a local level.
The new Poor People's Campaign talks about poverty, racism, militarism. And then we also are talking about ecological devastation because we think that's the greatest threat to our national security. So it is deeply rooted in the legacy that Reverend King left for us.
Retired Kentucky coal miner Stanley Sturgill says laws that weaken unions, remove worker protections, and keep wages low need to be repealed. Sturgill is from Harlan County, Kentucky, and was a union miner. He says a campaign to address poverty has to demand an end to anti-union laws.
We have an administration right now in place that is doing everything they can to set us back. We got an old saying in the coal mines, it's rough at the face. Well, where I live in southeastern Kentucky, it's rough at the face.
Nearly 400 people joined Reverend Houston for the campaign's fifth rally in Frankfort, Kentucky. Protesters were denied access to the state capitol as a group, but were told two people at a time could come in.
Imagine what will happen in Kentucky when all those people come together. Change is going to happen. And that's why they're blocking us out of the capitol. They know they can't stop the power of that.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Frankfort, Kentucky.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. West Virginia 511 is reporting a vehicle accident in Monongalia County, westbound I-68, mile marker 9 in Morgantown. Areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today with highs in the 80s. Clear skies tonight with lows in the 50s. Sunshine on Friday and Saturday, daytime highs in the 80s, overnight lows in the 50s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Many bat species are reliable predators for beetles, mosquitoes, and other bugs. They patrol Pennsylvania's night sky, gobbling up insects throughout the course of a summer. But white nose syndrome has killed millions of bats in the U.S. since 2006. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier found one experiment that could help keep bats in Pennsylvania's skies for years to come.
To save the bats of Pennsylvania, Greg Turner wants to build a better bat cave.
So this is the very upper section, and this whole cave is going to slope downhill.
Turner is a biologist with the Pennsylvania Game Commission. He's taken me to Indian Caverns in central Pennsylvania. This used to be a commercial cave. There's still an abandoned gift shop outside and fake display plants inside. It closed last year, and now the state is in the process of acquiring it as a way to preserve bats. The room he's taken me to is full of stalactites hanging from above. In between the stalactites are cavities, perfect places for hibernating bats to roost.
They'll put their whole body up against that rock because they like it to be really stable, stable temperatures. And so if you're surrounded by that rock is going to stay the same temperature pretty much all winter long.
Those stable temperatures are important for their hibernation. Bats aren't really sleeping when they hibernate, but their body temperature drops, along with the rest of all their other systems.
And that's why white nose syndrome was so deadly to them, because they come into hibernation, they shut down their immune system, they shut down their metabolism, their breathing comes down.
This makes them susceptible to the fungus that causes white nose syndrome. Most fungi eat dead and decaying matter. But white nose fungus, and you might want to cover your ears for this, feasts on living cells. A hibernating bat is an easy target.
And then this fungus just starts eating on them while they're in this state. And then they come out of that state and they're like, whoa, you know, what's going on?
The fungus creates whitish infections on the bat's face, clustered around its nose, hence the name. The bat expends energy fighting off the infection during hibernation. And in its weakened state, it can be easily preyed upon by other species once it leaves the cave. White nose has annihilated bat populations in the Northeast since it was discovered about 12 years ago in upstate New York. Hundreds of bats once hibernated in this cave. Now, there are only a handful that come.
And that's not uncommon. We saw sites that had 40, 50,000 bats go down to single digits.
But in some caves, bat populations have survived, which has given Turner and his colleagues a question.
What's going on at those spots? Why are the bats doing better here? Or why are they aggregating here? And what we found is those sites were a lot colder.
The ground temperature in Pennsylvania is around 53 degrees Fahrenheit. But depending on airflow, some caves can get down to 40 degrees or lower, which makes it harder for the fungus to spread. But how do you get a cave to cool down?
So over here is a big concrete wall. And this was the original opening to the cave. This was a big sinkhole opening. And it goes up maybe about 10 feet or so above the ceiling.
Indian Caverns can't cool down because its former owners sealed it off in some parts to keep tourists from wandering too far away. By removing a wall and installing a vent, cold air will be able to accumulate in the cave's lower reaches. Turner takes me down a series of passageways that wind downward, about 100 feet below ground. An underground stream runs alongside the path, which is lit only by our headlamps. Above us are rocks where someday bats could roost. So, can bats come back from white nose syndrome? It's a hard question to answer, Turner says.
But I would be satisfied at this point just seeing the population stabilize and maybe some slight increases, you know, as far as my lifetime goes. And, you know, looking towards the future generations, for them to be able to see these species would be a great achievement, I think.
The Game Commission will begin work on the cave this summer. With any luck, bats will be hibernating there this winter. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
Six restaurants in West Virginia and Ohio have been ordered to pay $111,000 in back pay and damages to 27 workers for minimum wage and overtime violations. Roxy Todd reports.
The U.S. Department of Labor says in a news release, a federal court for West Virginia's Southern District also imposed a $20,000 civil penalty on four Las Troncas restaurants and a Plaza Maya restaurant in West Virginia and a Las Troncas restaurant in Ohio. The order also covers Las Troncas corporate officers Lorena Arellano and Martin Arellano. The statement says an investigation found the restaurants willfully violated minimum wage, overtime, and record-keeping requirements from May 2014 to October 2017. It says the restaurants paid some workers only for their scheduled hours, without regard to hours actually worked. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have issued a new health advisory aimed at combating an outbreak of hepatitis A among people who use drugs and those who are homeless. Carol Lofton reports the advisory is designed to provide guidance for health departments and other programs providing services in identifying and preventing new infections.
The CDC reports that from January 2017 to April 2018, they've received more than 2,500 reports of hepatitis A infections associated with person-to-person transmission from multiple states. As of last week, West Virginia had around 200 cases reported for 2018. The CDC says that of the more than 1,900 reports for which risk factors are known, almost 70% of infected people report drug use, homelessness, or both. The advisory recommends health departments and service providers adopt a variety of tactics to control the outbreaks, but the main focus is to increase the use of the hepatitis A vaccine, particularly among high-risk individuals. The hepatitis A infection usually happens when someone ingests something that has been contaminated by the feces of an infected person. As a result, the CDC also recommends that health departments and providers double down on encouraging and teaching hand sanitation techniques. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.